July 1973. President Nixon stands in a resplendent-looking rose garden, a small group of dedicated staff gathered around him. There's an atmosphere of relief and celebration this morning. The president has just returned to the White House after a week-long stint in hospital, having contracted viral pneumonia. He's keen to thank those who have worked tirelessly in his absence and to show them and the American people that he's ready to get back to work. "As you can imagine," he tells his audience, "while I was there, I had a lot of chance to think, to sleep, to rest. Also, I had a chance to go through some of the mail sent out to me from all over the country. All of it touched me, but I tried to pick out one that I thought was particularly interesting." Nixon reaches into his pocket and retrieves a small square of paper, which he unfolds, grinning. He clears his throat and begins to read. "Dear President Nixon, I heard you were sick with pneumonia. I just got out of the hospital yesterday with pneumonia, and I hope you didn't catch it from me. Now you be a good boy and eat your vegetables like I had to. If you take your medicine and your shots, you'll be out in 8 days like I was. Love, John W. James III, 8 years old." The audience chuckles. "Well, John W. James III, I got out in 7 days, so I did a little better than he did," Nixon responds jovially. "I will take his advice. I will eat my vegetables, try now and then to take the shots. Maybe not the kind of shots that he takes, but who knows?" The crowd chortle again, and a satisfied Nixon folds up the sheet and replaces it in his pocket. It's a letter worth keeping. And of course, President Nixon was not the only one to receive correspondence from a youngster. Some of the most poignant questions, sage advice and heart-rending pleas ever received by American presidents have come via children's letters. These are some of the most memorable from over the last century. Each is a compelling reminder of the wit, wisdom, and political power of youth. In any democracy, elected officials of course serve everyone whom they represent, including those who voted for their opponents and those too young to vote at all. And children's correspondence with American presidents is especially entertaining and illuminating. Their letters often provide us with a guileless and pithy insight into the most pressing issues of each president's era. The most written to president of all time was Franklin D. Roosevelt, the man who steered America through the Great Depression in the 1930s. The facts and figures of it are startling. By the time of his inauguration in 1933, unemployment had rocketed to 25%. Half of American banks had collapsed, and productivity had fallen by two-thirds compared to 1929 levels. Factories, mills, and mines were abandoned, farms lost to foreclosure, and once prosperous families were left homeless and hungry. In the midst of the unprecedented calamity, a young girl wrote to FDR with a desperate and yet dignified plea. "Dear President and wife, this is the first time I or any of my people wrote any president, and I am here to ask you for $8 to get me a winter coat. This may seem very strange for a girl 12 years old to do, but my father is a poor, honest, working laundryman, and we have 10 in our family, and my father doesn't have enough money. He's a Democrat, and he did all he could to have you voted. As little as I am, I know just as much about depression as a grown person. Hoping to hear from you soon." Hers was just one of many thousands of forlorn appeals for help sent to the president and his wife, Eleanor Roosevelt. FDR went on to implement his famous New Deal, an expansive set of programs and projects which cost the government approximately $650 billion in today's money. It focused on the three R's: immediate relief for struggling Americans, economic recovery, and long-term financial reform. By the 1960s, America was entangled in the Cold War, and children were growing up with the threat of nuclear warfare looming large in everyday life. In the winter of 1961, a year before the Cuban Missile Crisis brought the world to the brink of a nuclear holocaust, a little girl overheard her parents talking about this very real peril. They were discussing the Soviet Union's plans to test the world's largest nuclear bomb, a 50-megaton weapon nicknamed Tsar Bomber, above the Arctic Circle. She anxiously wrote to President Kennedy. "Dear Mr. Kennedy, please stop the Russians from bombing the North Pole, because they will kill Santa Claus. I am 8 years old. I am in the third grade." Her letter received a reply from JFK, keen to reassure his innocent and frightened young constituent. "I share your concern about the atmospheric testing of the Soviet Union, not only for the North Pole, but for countries throughout the world, not only for Santa Claus, but for people throughout the world. However, you must not worry about Santa Claus. I talked with him yesterday and he is fine. He will be making his rounds again this Christmas." And in 1963, just months before JFK's assassination, the USA and the Soviet Union joined over 100 other nations in agreeing the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. It promised to end nuclear testing in the atmosphere, in space, and underwater. Caroline Kennedy, the daughter of the slain president, named it as "my father's greatest accomplishment." More recently, as discrimination against members of the LGBTQ community and everyday sexism have garnered more public attention in America, three young girls wrote to President Obama. Their handwritten note, embellished with smiley faces and stickers, asked for his help. "Dear Mr. President, two boys that are in our neighborhood said that girls cannot change the world. I hope you can give us some advice to change the world or to help us stand up to the two boys." President Obama responded with these hopeful, encouraging words. "Thanks for writing to me with your friends to let me know what was going on in your neighborhood. Don't listen to those boys. Girls can change the world, and your letter gave me the sense that you are a strong group of young ladies who will always speak up when things don't seem right. In the years ahead, remember that nothing is beyond your reach as long as you set your sights high and stay involved in the issues that matter to you. Know that our nation is one where everyone can pursue their dreams and that with hard work, you can accomplish anything you can imagine. I'm confident all three of you have bright futures ahead, and if any boys tell you otherwise, let them know that their president said that they better start recognizing that girls change the world every day." So why are these letters important, especially for today's young people? I trained to be a teacher straight after graduating from university. By my third or fourth year on the job, I was familiar with a sometimes alarming and sometimes gratifying phenomenon. My students regularly quoted my own words back to me, or reminded me of my own past decisions and actions in and around the school, often from months or years before. And it wasn't usually anything I had thought was significant at the time. They'd remember a dreadful joke I had made while we were assembled outside during a fire drill, or an exasperated scribble I'd left in the margin of the homework, or a fairly random anecdote I'd recounted during a lesson. It's still one of my favourite aspects of teaching. You never know which words are going to make a lasting impression on your students. And it's exactly the same with power holders of any kind. So if there's an issue you care about, or something you want to ask for, or if you have an experience to share, go ahead. Write a letter, email, tweet the people in power. Because you never know, yours might end up being the message that gives them a moment for pause, the one they fold up and keep in their pocket. Yours might be the one that makes a difference. Spotlight on sources. I was inspired to delve into this topic after reading To Obama with Love, Joy, Hate and Despair by Jean Marie Lascas. Barack Obama's Office of Presidential Correspondence ran a mammoth operation. It required 50 full-time staff members, 36 interns and a rotating roster of 300 volunteers. Together, they ensured that every one of the 10,000 messages received from ordinary Americans each day was read and replied to by the White House. During his time in office, President Obama unfailingly read 10 letters, selected and compiled by his staff and placed in his overnight briefcase, each evening before bed, for every night that he was in Washington, D.C. Lascas includes scans and copies of some of the original letters and investigates the people and stories behind them, stories of triumph, hardship, and transformation. The president's replies, typed up letters or handwritten notes, are also included. All told, Lascas weaves a truly moving account of a leader in constant dialogue with the people he both governs and serves. It's a beautiful book. There are so many other wonderful letters I wish I had time to cover, but unfortunately I'm overrunning. Please rate, review, and share this show if you enjoyed it. And if you'd like to contact me, you can on Instagram. I'm @thetimelyhistorian. Until next time, thank you for listening.